In this episode of Startups to the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about the tools we use to run our startups. This is Startups to the Rest of Us, episode 243. Welcome to Startups to the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, sir?
Well, I'm going on vacation next week to Hershey Park in Pennsylvania and take the family with us, or with me, I guess. And so I bought a couple of Kindles for the kids. And I have to say, like, the setup process for those is not terribly intuitive if you've never used a Kindle Fire before. Like, the actual setup of the Kindle itself was fine. It walked you through very easily. But, like, if you're trying to set it up for a kid to use, it just really wasn't. It wasn't obvious what you had to do in order to wire everything up to a household or create a kid's profile and things like that.
Did you get the Kindle Fire Kids version? They have the ones with the big bumpers and they like have free replacement and all that?
I did not.
Actually. I wonder if those are all set up for that already.
I bet they are. Maybe. Yeah, that could be. I just was like, I'll just get the cheapest thing there. And if they break it, I'll just buy a new one.
Right. And that may be why they don't make it super obvious to do the kid thing. They kind of push all that over to the kid version of it.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't too hard because I'd set something up similar on the Google Nexus that I had a while back. But of course, my kid dropped that on a concrete floor, so that didn't last for very long.
Yeah.
But I did get like some decent cases for the two Kindles. So we'll see how long they last. Nice. I'll give you an update as soon as they smash one.
Yeah, for real. So I've been sick, man. It took me down about 2 days ago. I was so sick, I couldn't listen to podcasts.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was awful. That's me. That's the sick. That's as sick as I get. I like put the earbud in and I was trying to listen and I just couldn't. It was my throat hurt and it was pretty crazy. So yeah, when I can't work and I can't listen to podcasts, those are kind of the two low points for me.
I can't imagine being too sick to listen to podcasts.
I know. It was terrible. So I was really bored then, you know, because it's like, at least if you're sick and you're lying there, you want to be able to listen to something. But I couldn't focus on it, and it was distracting, and it was like one of my ears was all jacked up, so it kind of hurt.
Wait a second. Distracting from what? What else did you have to do?
From the pain? I don't know. I couldn't focus on it. So I'm just getting back to it. I'm actually starting to lose my voice now. You know how like after you get over a head cold, you don't even feel bad anymore, but then you sound really bad? That's kind of where I'm entering now. And so I get the feeling I'm going to lose part of my voice here over the next couple of days.
Now, how did you get a cold? Because isn't it like 100 degrees?
It is 100 degrees. I have no idea. And it is the worst to be, it's bad to be sick and walk out and have it be 100 degrees. It just feels terrible. It feels wrong, right? It should be winter when you have like a bad cold and your head's all stuffed up and your ears jacked up. So I don't know how I got it. Probably my kids.
Well, you can always blame the kids for getting sick. Just about anything.
So, hey, today we're talking about the tools we use to run our startups. We've broken them down into several different categories, including things like team communication, customer communication, marketing, hosting, etc. We've never done an episode like this, and it struck me earlier today that it's reasonably frequent question that we get, whether I'm at a conference or whether I'm doing talks or whatever. Folks ask, they don't ask what tools do you use in general, but they'll say, I'm trying to get this done. What do you use for that? And I found that just over the years and talking to a lot of people and kind of just being on the interwebs like we are, I tend to have some type of recommendation. It's pretty rare that I need to Google for something. If they say, how do I do track podcast stats? I have, well, here's what I use and it works reasonably well. Or how should I set up payroll? Or how should I track online purchases or whatever? I mean, they're typically each of these I at least have, I may not be the expert on it, but I at least have used something and I have a go or no-go recommendation on it. And so you and I sat down, we put our heads together and we put together kind of the as complete a list as I think we can of the tools that we use to run our businesses.
I think the interesting thing is that a lot of these tools, there's overlap between them. And so, for example, you'll use certain tools and I will use other tools in some cases, but they solve generally the same problem. And the interesting part is that if you start looking across a broad spectrum of startups, people have different preferences for the tools that accomplish the same types of jobs. So just because we have a tool that we use and we like doesn't mean that it will necessarily work for you. But there are certain categories of tools that are generally applicable to most startups. startups. And I think that just knowing what else is out there and what other people are using can be really helpful in trying to figure out how to address some of the different problems in your own startup.
Right. And I think it's good you pointed that out, because just because we use those tools doesn't mean they necessarily are the best of breed or necessarily are the one that everybody should use. That's why there are competitors, because they offer different feature sets at different price points and that kind of stuff. So this is kind of a starting point. And if you're in a similar situation to us, where you're a very small company, let's say 1 to 10 employees, I think would fit, then these tools would probably be reasonably good for you. And I think if you're in an enterprise, a lot of them would not be. It really depends on the situation you're in and your budget, for that matter. So to kick us off, our first category is team communication. So this is trying to stay up to date and keep informed between your internal team, not with your outside world. And the first thing that we use is for chat, and it's Slack. Most people probably heard of it. The funny thing with this is Derek introduced Slack into the Drip team, and I was kind of resistant to it because I don't love IM. I don't love instant message. I feel like it interrupts. We used to do ICQ back in the day when we had a web development shop, and I just felt like it was constantly kind of people screwing around and didn't really push things forward. But pretty much within a week or two, I realized how invaluable Slack would be. Even though we do work in an office all together at least 2 days a week, there's still 2 or 3 days that we're apart, and it's really, really helped improve our communication during those times.
Yeah, I use a combination of Slack and a couple other things as well. But one thing that I've used kind of for a long time now is HipChat, which was out probably quite a long ways before Slack was available. And I'm actually considering moving everything over to Slack because I'm a member of a couple of different Slack chat forums or Slack chat groups. So it would be kind of convenient to have them all kind of on that same technology so that I don't have to have HipChat and Slack at the same time. Because the only thing I have HipChat for is for internal stuff. And it's nice that with Slack, it's all web-based, so you don't have to have a client on the desktop in order to use it. So,
yeah, I do use the desktop client, but you're right, you don't. I think one of our team members purely does it on the web, and I think it's a perfectly acceptable experience. I have to be honest, I am completely shocked at how quickly Slack grew. When I first heard the idea, I was like, well, yeah, there's HipChat and there's Campfire and there's like 10 others that already do the exact same thing. But somehow they did it differently and their growth has been insane. Hats off to them for basically being a B2B company with a growth curve like a B2C company. It's pretty impressive. The next tool that we use internally here building Drip is GitHub. We use GitHub for source control, and then we use GitHub issues to kind of track our development issues. And then we use a layer that's built on top of that called CodeTree. It's at codetree.com. It's actually built by one of our developers internally. His name is Derek, and he launched it as a small SaaS app. And it sprinkles enough cool stuff on top of GitHub issues that it is super valuable. It allows for prioritization and assigning to different people, and it can span multiple projects. So if you have a lot of GitHub projects and you want to see those all in one place, it's got a Kanban view, so like a Trello view or a list view. It's got just enough stuff that it's kind of made it invaluable. I wouldn't have moved over to GitHub issues because we're using Fogbugs for this before, but once Derek built CodeTree, that was kind of what convinced me to move over there. This is not for support. Remember, this is for development and our internal kind of development and issue and feature communications.
I still use Fogbugs and I still like it and works reasonably well for everything that I use it for. But I think the interesting thing here is that we kind of put this set of tools underneath team communication because you can use it for assigning tasks to different people, assigning features. And actually, you talked to me a little bit before the podcast about how you use the notifications in there to when something new comes in and has been added to source control, that you get a notification that something has been completed, and then you turn around and you notify your customers. So it's, in some ways, I see it as essentially workflow for the internal development team to say, hey, this particular thing is complete, send something over to the marketing team because you're kind of the marketing team, and then that marketing team can then let the customers know, hey, there's this new feature that you might be interested in. So it becomes more of a, not just an internal team communication, but it helps you formalize that process of all doing that internal development, send it over to the marketing team, and then letting the customers know that something new is available for them.
Exactly. And it keeps the stuff out of email, right? And then it's all tracked in one place. You can just go back to the issue and GitHub, and kind of the whole flow of our whole conversation about that issue as we hammer it out is all there in GitHub issues. Our other app that we use for team communication, no surprise, it's Skype. We will video Skype when we have a longer discussion to have, because sometimes typing stuff out into Slack just takes too long. So as needed, it doesn't happen too often. It's surprising. Maybe it's only once every couple weeks. So we also work a couple days a week in the same office. And so we do take care of a lot of the face-to-face stuff on those days. And then every couple weeks, we'll have one of the off days that we'll need to have kind of a face-to-face. And that's what we use Skype for. And lastly, with team communication, kind of an honorable mention here, because I didn't know where else to put it, is Trello. We don't actually use it for team communication. We really, each individual team member who uses it for their own to-do list and prioritizing and moving stuff around. But I do know a lot of companies that have shared Trello boards. They drive entire like CRMs processes off of it, or they'll drive their development off of Trello. So I did want to put it here as kind of a collaboration tool that I know a lot of companies are using.
So I use Trello as well, but I've started looking at a product called Workboard, which you can find at workboard.com. And it's almost like Trello, except that it's essentially like a project management layer that's added on top of Trello. So there's no real integration between Trello. It is a Trello-like experience. So it kind of crosses between what I guess Fogbugs used to offer in terms of assigning cases to people and issues and things to do. And I used to use Fogbugs for that, but obviously it gets expensive when you have VAs. But with Workboard, you are just essentially paying for that one manager account or however many managers you have in the company to be able to see some of the different dashboards and things like that. And I think that Workboard adds enough of a management layer on top of it to be able to push tasks through like what they call work streams, that you can use those work streams for different projects and you can see how those different projects are progressing. So it's something I'm still exploring, but it looks like a good alternative to Trello if you're looking for something that has a little bit more of the project management functionality built into it.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it before you mentioned it, and I'm pretty impressed with at least the tour they have on their website. It looks like something to keep an eye on. I think that it's like a strongly typed Trello. There's more to it for like software development teams or for more structured timelines, and I think there's a real benefit to that.
Yeah, and it is free if you just want to go for their basic team. They do have like a per manager plan, which is either $49 or $69 a month, but then you can have unlimited team members with that. So the advanced features and stuff include like progress heat maps and individual goals and goal dashboards and things like that. But I think that most people could probably get away with just like the basic team plan, which is free.
Our second category of tools is customer communication. And the first tool we use is for customer support. And we used to use Fogbugs up until maybe 60 days ago, and we moved to Help Scout. And I highly recommend Help Scout. We've had a very good experience with it. It's an easier UI to work with than Fogbugs and then a lot of the other support tools I've seen. They have keyboard shortcuts, kind of like in Gmail. If I wanted to go through 10, 20 issues at a time, it's super easy. I never have to touch my mouse. Hit R for reply, hit N for note. I can change statuses all with my keyboard. The other biggest perk I found is on my mobile. I check my email, an issue comes in. It's just a notification from Help Scout that says there's a new issue. If I respond directly to that email, it goes directly to the customer. If I respond to that issue, but I put the @ and I put note, it'll add a note to it. And then I can reply again and put @assign, and I can assign it to another team member. And the last one, I can reply and put @close, and it'll close an issue. So I can do my complete support workflow from my mobile without installing an app. It's all from within the email app itself. I use the Gmail app on iPhone. So it has rocked my world. I really like it because I find that I do a lot out and about. I do a lot on my iPhone when I'm in line or when I just have a few minutes to check stuff. And it helps me not have to see, oh, I got a notification. I'll handle that when I'm back at my computer. It has streamlined my workflow for sure.
I'm still using Fogbugs for all my customer support stuff, and it works fine for what it is. And then there's the cases where something's complicated enough that you have to get on the phone. So for me, customer support kind of falls into this situation where it's a very quick reply and I can just do it through Fogbugs, or it's very involved and I have to get on the phone. It doesn't seem like I get a lot of stuff where there's this middle ground.
The other communication tool we use, of course, is dealing directly with whether it's partners or maybe a higher medium touch stuff that we do, sales, anything like that. And that's just going to be straight up email. Of course, I'm in Gmail. Actually, all our team members are in Gmail. Everything forwards into their Gmail and they can segment it out and they can reply as their GetDrip account. And I found that works well because I have like whatever it is, 9 email addresses, and I certainly don't want to log into 9 different clients. So I have everything come in and things can be labeled and filtered as needed from there. And then I'm a big fan of Boomerang and Reportive. Those are two plugins that I use in Gmail, and they help me. Boomerang, of course, helps me send stuff later or boomerang back into my inbox to make sure that someone acts on something. So if I don't hear from them, I get reminded of that. And Reportive just gives me a nice little headshot and a little bit of information about the person who I'm emailing with.
The other one that I'll throw into this category besides Boomerang and Reportive is Sidekick. And Sidekick is from HubSpot. It's another plugin that you can essentially use alongside your Gmail account. And what it does is it allows you to send somebody an email, and then it will trigger a notification for you every time that email gets opened. So if you send somebody an email and they look at it three times or five times, you'll get a little notification pop up that shows you that that person looked at the email or saw it. And this is really good for high touch sales, because you can send somebody an email, and if they take a look at that email, you can see that. And then you can either call them, or you can send them a follow-up email if you haven't heard from them in a couple of weeks. And then suddenly they start looking at this particular email that you sent to them. It kind of triggers on your end this kind of a notification that says, hey, this person is looking at your email that you sent them 2 weeks ago. You might want to follow up with them now. It's probably a good time.
Our next category of tool is for marketing. And Mike, I'll give you three guesses as to what I use for email marketing, but your first two guesses don't count.
Oh, they don't count?
They don't count.
I'll have to go with AWeber and MailChimp.
Nice. Perfect. Perfect. So I use Drip for all of our email marketing, and I've moved. Again, I have like eight Drip accounts. I had three or four MailChimp accounts, but now that I have the ability to kind of expand at will, I have a bazillion Drip accounts, because we have the podcast and we have MicroConf and there's Zen Founder now and my Software by Rob lists, and then we have the Drip and the Hittail. You know, it just goes on and on. So Drip is what I use. I think we do still have one MailChimp account for kind of MicroConf, Micropreneur Academy stuff that we haven't moved over, but I've been deleting users out of that to get it pretty inexpensive. And at some point, I think we'll migrate all of that over to Drip. The other tool I use, surprise, is Hittail. Use that for long tail SEO. That's obviously another tool that I own. It helps find keywords in your traffic that you should be ranking for but aren't, and helps you rank for those. And the next one is for search engine rankings. I use SERP.
Oh, go back. Don't skimp on the other thing that Hittail does. You can order some new articles for your website based on what some of those keywords are that you should be ranking for.
Yes. And I do that quite frequently. I use our article ordering service often. And my bookkeeper says, what are all these $19 charges on your account? And I was like, well, they're technically going to us. I use that feature a lot. And then, yeah, next is SERPFox. And I use this to track search engine rankings. I've used a number of different tools. A lot of them go out of business because technically tracking search engine rankings is against Google's terms of service, because they don't have an API for it. And so you basically have to scrape their search results. So most of the companies that used to do it are gone. The two that I like are SERPFox and Authority Labs. And I've gone back and forth between using both of them. I happen to be using SERPFox right now, but I really do recommend both those tools. They do it solid, and I feel like they're in it for the long haul. How about you? What do you use for like SEO stuff?
Mostly I use Moz, and it doesn't necessarily give you great search engine tracking, but it does give you some level of search engine tracking. But I do like to use it to kind of measure against what the competitors look like in my spaces. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's a significantly more expensive tool than some of the other things out there. But at the same time, they have access to huge amounts of data. So it's nice to be able to kind of rely on some of their data sets to take a look at how your marketing results are coming in and get some idea of what their impressions are of what the landscape looks like.
I agree. That's Moz's competitive advantage, is no one else has their open site explorer stuff and all the data that they have. They really are on top of the game. And they have by far the best competitive analysis tool for SEO that I've seen.
And they also have Follower Wonk, which if you have a Moz subscription, then you get additional insights into Follower Wonk that you wouldn't get without it.
Right. There are a few other tools that I use intermittently, kind of when I'm starting a new business. I mean, something like Market Samurai or a Micro Niche Finder, which I heard is not for sale anymore. But those types of things, when I'm looking for a new niche or looking at keyword research or that kind of stuff, I do use them. I didn't really include them in this list because they're not something I use on an ongoing basis. Most of the things we've listed here are things that I'm subscribed to. I kind of went to my credit card statement and looked back at what do I pay for on a recurring basis, as well as some free tools, of course, that don't charge anything, such as Hootsuite, which is on the freemium model, and I've been using them for years and just never hit the point where I needed to pay for them. So I have to be honest, I don't love Hootsuite as a Twitter client, but all the other Twitter clients I've used have eventually been bought or shut down, or Twitter bought one of them and like removed a bunch of functionality so I couldn't do stuff. So I've stuck with Hootsuite because it's been consistent. It's not the best thing I've seen. It does allow for like multi-column views and some pretty sophisticated scheduling and other stuff. And I just can't seem to find another client like that that will sync up with an iPhone that kind of does all that I need. So Hootsuite is it.
Yeah, I've used Hootsuite in the past. And right now, my primary mechanism for doing some of that stuff is Buffer. So you can find that at bufferapp.com. And they've got a really good series of blog articles on their website that they publish on a very regular basis. Some of them relate specifically to their company, but some of them are kind of more general purpose in the startup world or in social marketing, that sort of stuff. But it's a useful tool. It doesn't have all of the features that Hootsuite does, but Hootsuite doesn't have all the features that Buffer does either. So
our next category is hosting. And for the most part, we use Amazon. We use EC2. We use Amazon S3. And frankly, we pay Amazon a house payment for a nice California home every month in the amount of servers and bandwidth and storage space and all the other stuff that we use.
Yeah, I use a combination of Rackspace and Microsoft Azure. So Microsoft Azure, their platform, I use a bunch of the different things that you probably use over on the Amazon side. So not just the hosting of VMs, but also the disk storage as well. And then with Rackspace, that's kind of where I have the static servers that I want to just be able to maintain myself.
Yeah, the other hosting provider that I do still have an account with is DreamHost. And I still think that DreamHost is a good shared host to get started with. When I have smaller sites, like lower traffic, I still put them up on DreamHost first. I actually host a lot of podcast files because they have a little CDN built in that allows it to be reasonably downloaded around the world and doesn't need to be super, super fast for the podcast download files. And to try to get something like Libsyn or something for the volume, the terabytes of download that we get every month would be really expensive. So it's nice to be able to do that. And then they actually do a lot of email hosting as well.
Yeah, I use DreamHost for exactly the same reasons, because they give you basically unlimited ability to download stuff and then all the different email. The other one that came to mind is WP Engine, which you can use that for all your WordPress hosting. We use it for the podcast site, for MicroConf sites, a bunch of other stuff as well. But WP Engine is just awesome for hosting anything WordPress related.
Yeah, that was the last kind of hosting or the third hosting thing that I use. And I think we have two WP Engine accounts because there's one kind of for my side, the Numa Group stuff, which is my blog and Zen Founder, and then all the Drip and the Hittail WordPress blogs and that stuff, our KB, our knowledge base is there. And then we have the whole MicroConf, Micropreneur Academy side of it. And I should divulge that I was an early angel investor in WP Engine, but I've been using them for years and I'm a big fan. It's still a very fast site with a lot of uptime. And I like the fact that I can back up with one click and restore. It's really been a good service for me.
Moving on with the list of hosting, I use Wistia for hosting all the videos on my sites. They had a bunch of different plans. They used to have, I think, more plans, but the spacing between them was much larger. I used to pay like $100 a month for it, and I was able to drop down to like the $25 a month plan just because my bandwidth requirements weren't nearly as much as what they were offering. And they moved the ability to have unlimited videos down into their $25 a month plan. And that's really why I needed the higher level plan. So since they moved that down, I was like, yeah, I'll drop down to this other plan because I don't need the bandwidth. And it's worked out really well. I think you use Vimeo, right?
I use Sprout Video, which is more of a direct competitor to Wistia. They're B2B services. Vimeo is more for creators. Like if you're a director, a filmmaker, they seem to have gone that route. But Wistia and Sprout Video are where it's at. And if I were to start over today, I would probably go with Wistia. But at the time when I signed up, their minimum plan was really expensive and I only needed to host one video for like 6 months. And so I went with Sprout because they had like a $9 plan or something. They both have good analytics and they both have a bunch of good stuff. But I think all things being equal, Wistia is probably a better service and it's what I would go with. But the switching cost at this point, I'd have to update so much code and lose so much legacy that, I don't think I'll be switching anytime soon. Rounding us out for hosting is really just podcast stats. And folks ask us how we know how many unique downloads or whatever our podcast has. There's a service called Blueberry, and it's Blubrry. They don't host the podcast, but they do kind of host a go-between your audio file, and it's like a proxy, I guess, between your audio file and the listener, and it gives you stats. And so I use this on all the podcasts that we have, this one in Zen Founder, and then the Startup Stories podcast that I released last year. Our next category is tech health. And our first entrant in that category is Pingdom. And this just hits your website every however often you specify, and it can tell you if the site is up or not. We also use it to hit some kind of private endpoints that we've set up that don't just say, is the site up, but they'll actually have a count of, say, how many records are in a queue. And if it gets over a certain record, we'll change a message, and it'll say, uh-oh, and Pingdom will pick up that if it says, uh-oh, it texts all of us, and it says, like, we have a problem somewhere. So it's not just site uptime, it's actually for us maintaining, like, queue throughput, and if anything were to die or slow down in terms of, like, sending emails or processing search keywords or anything like that, we'd all be notified. So we really use Pingdom to kind of help manage all the, it's both email and text notifications when things go awry.
So I switched over. I used to use Pingdom for this, but I started using a combination of Clicky, and I had New Relic running at one point as well. And then the other one I had that I used for a while was Varelo. And let me try to think of the last one. The last one was Rackspace Alerts, because Rackspace has it built into their platform where you can just set up alerts based on the ability to see your server from different data centers. So depending on where the traffic is, and that's the one that I kind of rely on the most right now, is just the Rackspace built-in alerts, because they do have those set up in the different data centers, and they do send alerts directly to you to let you know whether or not you can see a server from different data centers. And then in addition to that, they'll let you know when things are fixed.
Nice. Yeah, we also use New Relic as well. I had forgotten to mention them, but it helps check out. I had kept hearing about it and we never installed it, but I learned that it shows you all your consumption of RAM and CPU and disk space, and it's pretty helpful. The last couple for tech health, one is Honey Badger, which is from Benjamin Curtis. He's like a 3- or 4-time MicroConf attendee. And it's a service that basically catches Ruby exceptions, and then it gives you all the detailed information. There are some more generalized services that do this. They're really, really helpful. We often learn about exceptions right as our customers encounter them, and sometimes even before. And it's pretty cool to be able to get that, see exactly what the problem is, go in and fix it. And without a customer reporting it to you, email them and say, hey, we're sorry you ran into that page load error 20 minutes ago. It was a bug. Here's what it was. We fixed it. It's really a nice tool to be able to deal with. So even if you're not using Ruby, you can look for a more general, I don't remember the name of the one, but it's kind of like exception handling or exception management. And then last one in tech health, I want to give a hat tip to my DBA. He's at rubytreesoftware.com. His name's Creston, and he's really taking good care of us on the Postgres and MySQL side is what he specializes in. And he also is a Rails developer. So if you have a need for someone to help out with DBA and scaling and performance and that stuff, he helps us with all our backups and S3 management and just all kinds of stuff that as developers, we don't want to get involved in, right? It's much more DevOps and DBA stuff. It would be a lot of our time and a lot of headache if we didn't have Creston involved.
So I think now we'll move on to everyone's favorite topic, which is money.
Moving money, yeah.
Moving money.
Yeah, so first couple on the list are pretty obvious, right? Stripe and PayPal. Use both of these as well?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, and so we use Stripe to collect all the incoming money. I only have a PayPal account anymore, really, to kind of move money through other PayPal accounts. I guess aside from Micropreneur and MicroConf, I don't really collect PayPal payments much anymore. Oh, that's not true. I guess selling my book. So there are still a few places where I collect PayPal payments, but Stripe and PayPal, I think, kind of no-brainers. How about paying employees or paying yourself since you're an employee of your corp? What do you use?
So I've used ADP and Paychex in the past, and I've kind of flip-flopped back and forth between them until I decided that their fees were just kind of getting outrageous. And then this past year, I switched over to using Zen Payroll. And I love Zen Payroll. It's so much easier to use. It's a lot more intuitive and it's a lot cheaper. It's about half the price of either ADP or Paychex. So that's a nice bonus as well.
That's good to hear. I use Paychex. I've used them for 4 or 5 years since I set up the LLC. And they were great when I was one person, one employee. As soon as we got to 2 or 3, they started making mistakes. I would change something and they'd mess it up. It was some pretty simple stuff. So I become disenchanted with Paychex, and I'm actually planning in about 1.5 weeks to move to Zen Payroll. So I've only heard good things about it, and I'm excited to get everything moved over there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pain to set up at first, but once you've got it set up, it's pretty smooth. And I think the only thing that I'm not real fond of is the fact that if you own your own business, it's a little bit difficult to set up things in such a way that you can have it automatically pay yourself a kind of like an owner's dividend and not count that as like a reimbursement. So it's kind of a pain to do that. You have to kind of do it outside of their system, but otherwise everything else is pretty smooth.
Oh, that's okay. I've always done that outside of payroll system, so that won't be a problem. Next one is Upwork, which used to be called Odesk. And Upwork is both a way to manage, right? There's like a project management aspect of it, but I've also found it really handy for moving money around the world because I used to pay people in the Philippines and they don't have PayPal or they didn't have PayPal there. And it was really hard to get money there. In certain parts of India and certain parts of the world, these things that we take for granted aren't there. And Odesk and slash Upwork really doesn't have a problem doing that. So I've actually moved contractors into Upwork and you pay like a 10% upcharge basically. But in order to get the nice project management and the easy move of money and the automatic payments where I don't have to manually cut someone a PayPal invoice or whatever, it's been worth it for me.
Yeah, I use them as well. And funny enough, when they were changing their name from Odesk to Upwork, I was kind of just in the final stages of releasing my book. So I had to go through and change it or just add in a little note that says formerly called Odesk and call it Upwork instead.
Oh, man.
But it was right at the tail end of it. It was kind of a pain. The only other thing I'd add onto this is Gumroad. So I use Gumroad for selling my book, The Single Founder Handbook, and it makes things very easy. You don't have to mess around with a shopping cart or anything like that. And if you have any sort of updates that you want to issue, so if there's spelling mistakes or anything like that, if it's a product where you have to provide any sort of updates, you can just do those directly inside of Gumroad, and it will automatically issue those updates to everybody and let them know that there's an updated set of files that they can download, which is really nice so that you don't have to worry about, okay, who has what version and did they pay for it or what have you. It'll just do it automatically for you.
Yeah, I've used Gumroad as well. My son wrote a book called A Parent's Guide to Minecraft, and we sold it through Gumroad just because it was kind of a no-brainer. You know, it's the simplest way to get something up there and start collecting some money. So that rounds out our moving money category. Let's move on to the last one. It's a back office. I kind of threw everything else in here that I noticed I was being charged for that didn't really fit into the other categories. So we have accounting, and I use Xero, which is pronounced X-E-R-O. I've also used Outright in the past, and they were fine. Then GoDaddy bought them, and they're so-so. They're kind of the same. I'm more of a fan of Xero. Xero is also three times the price, so it kind of depends on what budget you're in. Outright works perfectly fine for smaller, less complex businesses. With all that I have going on, I found that Xero is a better fit, but it's like $30 a month, so you have to make up your mind on that.
Yeah, I use Xero as well, and I've used a bunch of different things in the past. I used to use QuickBooks for a long time, and then I switched over to, I've used Outright in the past, and what was it? There was a couple other things.
Indinero.
Indinero. Yeah. Yep, we used that before. You know, I had a couple of accounts there as well, and I like Xero just because I know my way around accounting software, and it works well. It does exactly what it is that I need it to do, and I've basically handed everything off to a bookkeeper, and she doesn't seem to have a problem with the software, so
yep.
Works out nice.
Yep, I use the same bookkeeper. She does a bang-up job. Next, for affiliate management, I use Ambassador at getambassador.com. I imagine quite a few folks have heard of that. Stamps.com. I finally signed up for an account maybe 18 months ago, and I have never looked back, man. I have not made a trip to the post office in 18 months, and it is the best thing ever just to have this scale that you plug in, and you can weigh stuff, and you print the postage out right there. It's like we're living in 2015 or something. Honestly, I sell stuff on Amazon or eBay. Like I resell old, whatever it is, old computers or old books or just stuff that I have. I don't like to keep a lot of stuff around my house. So if I'm done using it, I'm not going to use it. I post that thing for sale or I give it away to Goodwill. When I post it for sale, it comes with the burden of having to ship it. So that was one of the reasons I got it. The other thing is with Drip, we give a lot of Drip t-shirts away when people like get their first conversion goal hit or if they tweet something cool or whatever. I like to ship people a shirt or maybe like a nice Moleskine notebook with Drip stamped on it. And so there's a decent volume of those going through. I've just found that there's quite a few things that I wind up shipping out, and to not have to run to the post office all the time is totally worth the whatever it is. I think it's maybe $15 a month, and then you just pay the exact same price you'd pay in the post office for postage.
Got it. I don't ship things out very often, and I've tried to move to completely online for most things or just not bother dealing with anything. So for example, bills and stuff, any business bills, I try to push that off to my bookkeeper. And then the personal bills and stuff, I just pay them all online. So I try as little as possible to deal with paper mail if possible, but there are those few exceptions. So.
And lastly, in our back office is GoDaddy, the domain registrar. I think if I was starting over today, I would probably use someone like Hover, which I think is spelled H-O-V-E-R-R. I think they're probably a better bet for it. They have less kind of upsells and all that kind of junk. But I have 60, 70, maybe even 80 domains with GoDaddy, and all the DNS settings and stuff, it's just too much of a hassle to change. So that's what I use. How about you?
So I've used Active Domain for a long time. So it's active-domain. And I have a bunch of domains registered there. And then I have a bunch that are over on DreamHost. And at one point I tried to kind of do some sort of a consolidation, and then I got distracted and never completely finished it. So I've got a bunch of domains that are at Active Domain, and then the other half of them are probably over at GoDaddy. And they both work reasonably well. No real complaints either way. Well, I think that about wraps us up. If you have a question for us, you can dial it into our voice number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupstherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupstherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.